So I said last week that I was going to spend some time talking about tithing and giving, and I wondered if anybody would return for this week. So for those of you who were brave enough to come, thank you for showing back up again. I appreciate it. I have these illustrations here, just sort of like a way of introducing the topic. And the title, and I actually posted on my Facebook, The Pettiest Acts Ever Witnessed. And so there's this list of people who reported about some petty things that they had saw happen. The word petty exists because it's really sort of like one of those words that exist in opposition to thankfulness. That when somebody's petty, they're being sort of petulant about something that really shouldn't matter, right? And that they're really bigger things, they're more important things to be thankful for. And so I'm just going to read a few of these for you and see what you think, because it helps to sort of grab the spirit about what it means for people to be, and not that anybody here is like this, but it sort of just gets us thinking along those lines. A girl in my high school broke into a hysterical, foul-mouthed, tear-filled rant because her father surprised her after school with a brand new, fully loaded BMW for her birthday. She apparently wanted a Mercedes. So I can't begin to imagine. I would sell the car and buy my house, probably pay off my house or whatever. So that'd be pretty amazing. A girl in my high school received a used car on her 16th birthday. She was unhappy with the fact that it was a used 3-year-old, so she intentionally totaled it. She didn't get a new car, however, and had to ride the bus. Good. Yeah, I wonder if she could even sit on the bus seat after that, but... This elderly lady was pulling her car into a tight spot. I'm trying to get all the demographics here. You know, we got to get everybody. This elderly lady was pulling her car into a tight spot in the post office. I offered to help her to spot her so that she wouldn't hit anything. She lowered the window and screamed at me about how she was over 70 and didn't need anyone's help. Needless to say, she ended up hitting one of the cars. So, you know. Number 5, I gave my ex-girlfriend's family my old car, a 2003 Nissan Maxima in great condition. I would take a 6,000-year-old Maxima. They're great. They're nice cars, right? You know, because they were going through a hard time, and I had just gotten a new car. They proceeded to get down on their knees and thank Jesus, answering their prayers. I still haven't gotten a thank you. Well, thank God, but thank the person that God worked with, too, right? Don't you think? I found a $100 bill on the sidewalk near a family packing their car up for a trip. I politely asked the mother if the money was hers. She got really irritated with me and called her husband over, who literally snatched the bill out of my hand. I stood there for a few minutes, baffled as they ignored me. After I realized that I wouldn't even get a thank you, I continued walking home. And then he says, I wish I'd kept the money. So, how about this? My cousin got either a $100 or $150 check from our grandma for her birthday, and she tore it to bits and cried about how it was such an insultingly small amount of money. What are we teaching our kids today? You got to wonder, don't you? I knew a kid that didn't like the skateboard his parents got him, so he set it on fire because he thought they would get him a new one. Nope. He just went to school without eyebrows for a year. My dad was a truck driver and found an old man lying on the road one night all by himself in the middle of nowhere who didn't seem to have a pulse. My dad gave him CPR for several minutes until he regained a pulse, stayed with him there in the cold for an hour until the ambulance came to take him away. In the process of saving this old man's life, my dad also fractured one of the man's ribs, which is quite common with CPR. He and his wife sued my dad for more than $100,000. Pretty amazing, huh? Actually, they probably lost because you really can't sue a person for Good Samaritan acts in most cases. So, I once had to do a bunch of yard work for this older person to save money for something I wanted. It took days of hard work. I was scratched, bruised, and exhausted. She had the nerve to give me a quarter, a single quarter. Maybe she's just one of those ones, well, you ought to be doing this for me anyway, you know, yeah, kind of thing. And then finally, a horse kicked my friend's daughter in the chest, collapsing her throat. She couldn't breathe. I performed an emergency tracheotomy, saving her life. About 2 months later, I got a letter from a law firm. they changed their mind about how grateful they were and decided to sue me for leaving a scar from the tracheotomy. Well, look, you know, here's the thing. I mean, we see these kinds of examples, don't we? And we think how awful. But all of these good things, all of these good things that these people have done for other people, and the petulance and the pettiness of how these people respond pales in comparison to oftentimes our response to God for all the great things that he has done for us, not the least of which is his death upon the cross for our sins. I mean, really, if we were to add up in our life the sum total of how thankful we have been and how we have demonstrated our thankfulness to God in comparison to his goodness to us, how many of us, I wonder, feel really good about that? I don't feel good about it in terms of my life. There is much more that I could do in the way of being thankful and demonstrating my thankfulness to God for what he's done for me. Much more. And so sometimes I think, you know, it's easy to look at people like this, but I suspect that when we get to heaven and God does the calculus in front of us, we're all going to be surprised, not only by what we didn't do and by what we did do, but we're going to be surprised about how still merciful and gracious he is to us. I think that's going to happen. I think that's true. So one of the people that I know in our church, and I know many, but one of the ones that I've asked just to come up and share a little bit about why, and by the way, I mean, I'm going to get to this, but if you're a visitor here, this is sort of like an in-house discussion that I have to have every once in a while. It's important to have, not just because I know, I hear it all the time. I hear about how, you know, there are some churches and all they're about is money and giving and things like that. And that's I would just ask Bobby Ambrose today, when was the last time that you heard me speak on tithing or giving? I think it's been 4 or 5 years. I have alluded to it at times here and there, but I've not spent an entire sermon on it for about 4 or 5 years. And so because of some things that are going on in our church and some things that are coming up, I just thought it was important for us to have this conversation discussion. So we're glad you're here if you're a visitor. I just hope that you understand that, you know, this is sort of like an in-house conversation that we need to have, and I'm not going to spend weeks on this. I think this is the only Sunday I'm going to be talking about it, but it's a necessary talk. But having said that, there's a guy in our church who has demonstrated many times to me, very quietly, his heart and his spirit when it comes to giving and serving in this way. And so I'd like Kevin Crawford to come up and share a little bit about why he does what he does. He and Debbie and their family, why they do what they do. So thanks, Kevin, for coming up.
Good morning. Pastor was giving those little stories. I happened to think one probably about 45 years ago. I shoveled a driveway. 45 years ago, I shoveled a driveway for a guy, and I thought, man, it was a long driveway, and I thought, this is going to be a $10 job here. It ended up being a cup of hot chocolate. I thought my mother was going to go beat him with a Bible.
You didn't drink it all in one place, did you?
I should have dumped it out and walked away. Probably a year ago, a pastor asked me to come up and speak a little bit about giving and tithing, and I told a little bit about my history with it. Probably for the last 7-8 years, I've been on the budget committee for church, and every year we sit down and we put a budget together, and we have this big long list. It's probably 4 or 5 pages long, and we fund everything that is a need in the church. We fund it. You know, we put this much in this line, this much in this line, this much in this line. And then at the end, we divide it all up by 52 and say, this is what we need each week. And then we struggle to get it there. And we move this around, or we don't fund this, and we can't pay for this right now. We wait, and it's frustrating. I've been coming here my whole life since I was a year old, and I've said before, it's never been I call it a fat church, because we're never financially fat, ever. And it's frustrating. But we're still here, though, you know, because God is still in this church. And his church won't fail because God doesn't want it to fail, even though we'll struggle. But if we do the things that we're supposed to do as Christians and serving, you know, it's part of the deal. Tithing is part of the deal. It's part of serving God, like it or not. He doesn't want it all. You know how hard you work for what you have. And think about what you're blessed with. Think about the things that you have. You know, sometimes we might take things for granted of what we have, but God's blessed you with everything that you have. And he doesn't want all of it, but he, as a servant of his, you got to give it some of it back. So, and be joyful about giving it. You can't, don't begrudge giving an offering to the Lord, because that's, you're giving an offering to the Lord. You can't, how could you begrudge that? It's beyond me how you could feel that way. I was challenged a few years ago with the last dreaded tithing sermon that we had from Pastor. He challenged me, and I increased my tithing. And my small family company that we've had for over 55 years now is it's struggling still. It hasn't gotten too much better over the last couple years, but we're plugging along. And I was approached by a huge company to bid on a supply contract. And I shared it with the pastor and some others, you know, to pray that, it would be life-changing to get this contract. And the pastor jokingly and teasingly said, yeah, you're going to get that. You're going to be blessed, and your tithing's going to go way up. And I thought, yeah, it would. But then when he asked me yesterday about saying a couple words, I thought about that, and I said, what if I don't get it? What if I don't? I'm still so blessed. Even though we struggle, I'm still so blessed. And even if we don't get that contract, am I given what I should be given? So now he's got me thinking again. So that's what he does. He's got me thinking to maybe I should be praying and reevaluating what I should be given. Am I given as much as I'm being blessed? Probably not. If you think about that, you're not. You're not given as much as you're being blessed, I'm sure, because you never outgive God's blessings. It just never happened. So I challenge you to prayerfully consider what you're given. And it is a commitment, but God will bless you. There's no question. You know, at the end of the month, as much as I fuss and struggle and paying, you know, the bills at the business, and, you know, Debbie moves things around to get stuff taken care of, and she said, look, it's paid. Everything got paid, didn't it? That's just blessings from God. You know, if you look back at it, that's what it is. It's blessings from God, and you're just giving some of it back. So Thanksgiving's coming. Think about what you're thankful for, what you've been blessed with, and prayerfully consider what you're given, and if God will have you to give a little more, because he'll bless you with it. I've proof of it. I've seen it. I know it'll happen. So thank you.
I just want to underscore, too, I really was joking with Kevin about that. I want you to know this. I in my almost 13 years here, I have never begrudged. I am thankful for every cent that comes through that helps to fund whatever we do. Very thankful. And I see it providentially in many respects. That, you know, if we were going to have a lot of extra, then in many respects God would bring that. But as a pastor, you know, part of my responsibility as a pastor is, this is, how do I want to say this? It is, but in another vein, it's a different thing. That when we give to the Lord sacrificially, it's not just so that we can bless whatever or whomever we're giving to. It's a spiritual discipline for us. It grows us. Does this make sense to you? I mean, it It's a test of faith on our part. That's what it is. And so, and in fact, I'm going to read a passage to that end. And so I know that it's easy to think of tithing as a one-way street, but it is not a one-way street. It's a two-way street. That you throw your bread upon the waters. I'm mixing my metaphors here, but you throw your bread upon the waters, and in time, it comes back to you only magnified. It does. So, thank you, Kevin, for sharing that. And I appreciate, you know, all that you, your support and your encouragement that you've given to me over these years that I've been here. So tonight we're going to be having our annual meeting, and so it seemed to me that because we vote on our budget, that it would be important to have this conversation a little bit as well. So, a few caveats. If you're visiting, this is a house discussion. Number two, I understand that when we talk about tithing, there are some people who have been burned by the church. I understand that. Ruth and I are one time part of a church where we said that we would give X amount, and so something happened financially to us, and so we had to give in proportion to what we could give, and so we started getting these letters from this church about how we weren't, and they weren't nice letters. We just sort of felt burned by that experience. I had another friend who attended a church where every Sunday the church would list who gave the most amount of money the preceding. I mean, there was a board, and you walked in, and one of the first things you saw was a person's name and how much money they gave to the church the week before. And not only that, but that church also had like an assessment committee. And so every year they would send out to the church members what they thought each of those members could give. And so they billed the church members in that way. I'm suspecting some of those are church damaged people, okay? I mean, that would be sort of like traumatic to have that experience, I would think, right? So I understand that people get burned by the church in that way. Some people have never been taught about giving, what the church has, what the Bible has to say about giving. You've never been taught. And so maybe some of you are here. You just don't know what the Bible teaches. And so as a pastor, I have this responsibility to instruct our people, not just so that you give to God's work, but so that you can enter into the discipline that God wants you to learn from, the discipline of giving in that regard. There are some people here who give disproportionately. They give more than their 10%. And there are some people who give less. And maybe that's all they can do for right now. And I'll talk a little bit about that too. And maybe I'll just talk about it right now, because I just want to say, look, all this is new to some of you. And some of you are in circumstances where where you're being hammered by circumstances in life. And I have been there too. So what was it, Thursday night, I was leaving Cranberry and I was on my way to Monaca to meet my son Jordan, and I picked up a nail in my tire. Just outside of Freedom, there's this market out there, I forget what it's called. It's not the Freedom Market, but it's sort of out in the country. What's that? Pine Run, yeah. So I pulled off into the Pine Run Market, and I called AAA, right? Yay, AAA. Okay, sir, yeah. Well, your membership has just lapsed. So we can send somebody, but you have to re-up your membership. $155 to re-up my membership for AAA. So that was what I was just going to try and live on through the week, through the weekend until we get paid on Monday. And then, so I'm trying to talk like I think you have these experiences too, don't you? And it's not like we didn't have a credit card. It's not like we didn't have some money in savings. But if you used your credit card and your savings for everything that came along like that, what would happen? No more savings and your credit card would be through the roof, right? And so we try to live within our means. And so, so we got hammered. We didn't do some things this weekend we would have liked to have done or as much just because of that reason. So I'm with you in all this. I know how life can be and how we can all struggle in these kinds of ways when we make commitments. And all of us make financial commitments. We make financial commitments to buy a house. We make financial commitments to buy a car. We make financial commitments to help our kids through school, to buy clothes. We make all kinds of financial commitments. And the point of the scriptures in relationship to tithing is that our tithe is no less of a financial commitment than any of those other commitments. In fact, when we read some of the text, it's the first commitment. So as I talk about this, then we're not getting anything off there, huh?
No.
Huh?
The bullets aren't coming up.
Or my bullets aren't coming up. That's not a good thing. So let's see if we can get that. Let's see if we can get that, because this is where I want to go next. So this is an interesting story. This is from the book of Genesis, and so Moses records in the book of Genesis this account. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. And the Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering. So you have this distinction here, where Cain, who was a tiller of the earth, brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. So there's this sense in which what is being conveyed here is God is being patronized, that Cain is grudgingly giving him some. Now, when somebody says to you, I gave you some of this, it could be the very best of some, or it could be very worst of some, right? It's just some. It's nothing more than that, right? It's just some. But Abel brought fat portions. So Abel was a herdsman. And he brought the choice portions of the meat. And that was among the firstborn of his flocks. So most people who are herdsmen don't want to give you their firstborn, because that's usually the best. And you know that the firstborn are already here. You haven't had any more of the second or third or fourth born. You just have the firstborn. And he gave the firstborn as an act of faith. So Abel brought the best of the first to God, in honor of God, because he was thankful for what God had done for him. So you have this striking contrast taking place here, where Cain begrudgingly gives God some, and on one hand, and Abel gives him the best. Now, apparently, you know, this enraged Cain so much, as we read later on, that Cain took Abel's life because he felt humiliated by how God honored Abel but did not honor him, Cain. So it goes on to say, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry and his face downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, why are you so angry? Why is your face downcast? And so this just reminds me of these examples that I was reading about you before, right? These people who were blessed with wonderful gifts, wonderful things that other people did for them. Two people whose lives were saved, who became very angry later on, whose face became downcast, and they went after the person who blessed them. And so Cain, and by implication here, Cain is not only angry at Abel, but Cain is angry at God. Because God should have, in Cain's mind, God should have blessed him and honored him and looked upon favor with what he did, because, after all, he gave some. So then the Lord said to Cain, why are you so angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? This is an interesting phrase here. He doesn't say, will your sacrifice not be accepted? He says, will you not be accepted? And by implication, the sacrifice is the person. So what I give of my sacrifice, I give of myself. And if I give of myself, my sacrifice, not only will my sacrifice be accepted, but I will be accepted because I and the sacrifice are one and the same. Does this make sense?
Yes.
But if you do what is right, sin, but if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it. And so what he's really addressing here is, you know, the nature and the condition of Cain's heart. And that Cain wanted to patronize God, and God will not be patronized. I think we're all honest, we've been in Cain's place, that we've done things for other people, and we've done things for God, and we thought in our own mind that when we did those things, that they were really bigger and better than what they really were. That we really wanted more accolades. We wanted more credit. But really, we shouldn't have. And so it always comes down to the worthiness of stuff worth the versus the worthiness of God. My bullets aren't coming back up again. I don't know why that's happening. I apologize. I used a different template here, and so that's part of the reason why. And the fact of the matter is that when we do give, there's always this cost-benefit analysis that we do, don't we? You know what a cost-benefit analysis is, don't you? Like, if I invest in this thing, what is the worth of it that comes back to me? How will it benefit me if I give in this way? So when a farmer goes out to plow a field and he wants to put all that, you know, all those resources in terms of fuel and wear and tear on the machinery and time and cost in terms of seed or whatever, you better believe that in his mind, he's worked out the cost benefit analysis that everything that he's invested in that he believes that he has to get back a certain amount that's much more than what he put into it. When you're hired by anybody and they look at your resume, they do a cost-benefit analysis. They ask the question, is this person skilled? Are they reliable? Can you count on them? Because I know we're going to be spending so much money in salary or wages, we're going to be spending so much money in healthcare, we're going to be spending so much money in training, and the cost-benefit analysis of hiring this person has to far supersede what we've put into it. Otherwise, we can't make that hire. That's why they have things called layoffs. Because in the cost-benefit analysis, what they're paying you, they're not making enough money to keep you. And that's what happens. But I want to say this, that God is not an investment. We are the investment, but he is not. And so we have to be careful that when we live or do things for God, that we don't do it because we believe that he is going to, that there's this cost-benefit analysis that's going to bless us. We live for and serve that which we love most. Now think about that for just a second. We live for and serve that which we love most. Where do we put our time? Where do our resources go? Wherever those things are and where there is a preponderance of those things, that's what we love. And that's what we live for. Because we do the cost-benefit analysis. Because we're just not going to put a bunch of like resources or money or time into something that isn't going to benefit us. We live for and serve that which we love most. So what are some of the characteristics of biblical sacrifice? They are this, that when the Bible talks about making sacrifices to God, for God, it's always the first fruits. It's always the best and the first. I remember years ago, we got into a situation where I could buy my first truck. I'd always wanted a truck. I love trucks. And it was probably 9 years old. It was a 2011 Dodge Ram, blue, called it Big Blue. And you know, as I wrangled and wrestled with whether or not to have that, to get that truck, I made this determination that, I mean, it made me think again in a very poignant way, why am I getting this? And at the time, we had some things like a food pantry at our church, and some other things that were going on. And at the time, it made me think through, now, wait a minute, if I'm going to get this, it has to have something that's redemptive, that's good, that serves the church more than it just serving me. And I had to think that through. And I can tell you, honestly, and there are other people like you in this church, I know, who probably are better at it than I am, but I can tell you honestly that I have never refused to use any of the trucks that I've had since then for the church. Mm-hmm. Because I see it as a blessing from God. I love having it, but I have never refused to use it to help move things, to help get things, whatever it is. Because I saw it as God blessing me and that I needed to return that blessing. So it's always the first fruits and the best fruits. Those fruits are without defect. We don't give God our second best, we give him the best. It's always offered without hesitation. You ever bump into that person when you ask them to do something, even though they're like busy or preoccupied or they got a lot going on, and you say to them, could you help me with this? I know it's a lot, but could you help me with this? And they just say, yes, I'd be glad to do that. Yeah, but I know, but it's okay. We'll work it out. I want to help you. I've had many people in this church like this. And I've had, and I've been blessed many, many times. But it's so refreshing, because we've all had this experience too, right? You ask somebody to for their help on a particular thing, and they go, "Oh man, I suppose." You're like, "No, forget it. No, I don't." We've had that experience, have we not? And when you have that experience, you just don't want anything to do with it. It's just not pleasant. Well, I think God loves to give from us without hesitation our best and our first. The Bible's very clear that when we give our best and our first, that it's always a matter of trust and faith. Again, during the cost-benefit analysis thing, you think, but I could use this money, or I could use this time, or I could use these resources for this and this and this and these other things. And it's true, you really could. But in God's providence, as he has arranged things in his cost-benefit analysis, he's thinking, now, if this person and this person and this person, they all give 10%, and they give of these resources, and they use this, then the kingdom that I want to build on earth forms and comes together in such a much better way. But when people withhold because they think they know better what to do with that 10% of whatever it is, then the kingdom becomes very spotty and things don't come together. Look, one of the greatest challenges and dynamics since I've been here is this, that we want to do more ministry, but we can't do more ministry because we are limited by our finances. And because we're limited by our finances and we can't do more ministry, we can't reach more people who might be able to give us more finances to be able to do more ministry. Does this make sense to you? It's just a deadly thing, okay? And that within that, one of the things that's been a difficult thing for us is that there have been occasions where when we've gone down, and so I'd have to send a letter out to the church or whatever, and people would respond. But here's what happens. It's the consistency. It's people sitting down and saying, we can do this X amount, and you can count on this X amount for 12 months of the year, unless something really big happens, you know, like a job change or whatever, job loss or whatever. But we will do this, and we will consistently do this, because we have enormous ebbs and flows in the giving within our church. Enormous ebbs and flows. Now, I'm assuming that your income remains relatively the same as mine does. So if that's true, then how do we explain the enormous ebbs and flows that haunt our giving here at times? So that people like Bobby or Judy before her, or Joan Smith, who's going to be our new treasurer, they have to juggle. And they go over there. And by the way, being the financial treasurer of a church is one of the most time-demanding, emotionally exhausting experiences that you can have. Because whether they try to or not, they take on the burden of having to meet all of these obligations financially. And it can be challenging for them. So you should thank them, because it's a lot of time, it's a lot of money. I mean, not a lot of money, well, it's a lot of managing a lot of money, but it's a lot of time, it's a lot of energy. And so I'm very thankful for the treasures that we've had. It's, I don't know. I mean, because if you trusted someone like me, you just know. I have one brain cell for math. In it is stored the word math, so it's all used up. I can't do anything more than that, really. And so, and just so you know, I'm as far away from all that stuff as I can possibly be. I want nothing to do with managing any money in our church at all. And it's important for me to say that to you. I don't know the combination to the safe. My name is not on the checking account. I am nowhere near it. I don't want to be near it for that reason. So the question about giving is always a matter of worthiness. So when we talk about giving to God first, do we give God 10% of our time? Do we give 10% of our resources? Do we give 10% of our talents, gifts, and skills? Do we do that? Is He worthy of that? Is God worthy of 10%? And you get to keep the 90%. Is He worthy of 10% of all those things? 10% of our time, 10% of our resources, 10% of our talents. I kid you not. There have been times in the past, not in this church, but in other places, where I would ask somebody who was greatly skilled to help us with a particular thing, and it was like I was asking them for their firstborn child. You can do this like without thinking. You know, but they would sometimes lord it over me that they had that ability, and that the church was asking them to do something that they just didn't. So whether it was some kind of technical skill or whatever it was, I've had that experience. If we all as a church family came together and exercised 10%, gave 10% of what God has given to us on every level, it'd be pretty amazing to see what would happen here, I think. So I want to go to this passage from Malachi, because this is really the text. And it's from, Malachi was a minor prophet. He was a contemporary of Nehemiah, who rebuilt the wall of Jerusalem following their captivity and return. He was also a contemporary of Ezra, who was part of the returning remnant from the captivity following Nehemiah, and he rebuilt the temple and reinstated Judaism and its worship. And there were three prevailing issues that were going on at the time: religious syncretism as it related to Jews marrying pagans, and the Jews and pagans blending their worship, which was a real issue back then. It was also about the abuse of the disadvantaged, the poor, and it was about failure to pay tithes. And so there's a certain sense in which if they were to pay their tithes, then the abuse of the disadvantage would diminish, and that they would have more resources to address, the worship in Judaism as it needed to be. So, and so that's what was going on at the time as Malachi uttered this prophecy. And so, if you have your Bibles, you can turn to Malachi 3, 8 through 10. And this is what Malachi says. Will a man rob God? Yet you rob me. But you ask, how do we rob you? In tithes and offerings. You are under a curse, the whole nation of you, because you are robbing me. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have enough room for it. So this is the spiritual discipline that God wants us to, he wants us to test him in terms of what we do for him and how that will come back and be a blessing to us. And that if we don't do for him in that way, we withhold from God, and because we withhold, he describes it as a robbery. And I suspect that someday, that when we stand before God and we get that sort of secondary judgment where he blesses us according to that which we have and have not done, that probably for me, as maybe for others, this will be one of the things that comes up. That I just didn't give as much as I should have in terms of my finances, my resources, my time, and my talents. And so I'm saying to you that the language here is very clear, that when we don't give to God what is his due, that he sees it as robbery of him. Remember John Guest's preaching about this years ago at St. Stephen's when I was attending there as a college student. And I was so amazed at the boldness with which he talked about this particular passage. I mean, he was unabashed as he shared this. And so, because the passage is bold. But it's bold for a reason. It's bold because we live in a desperately fallen world. And we live among people who live in deep darkness. And somehow we think that if we patronize God and give him a little bit of what he's given back to us, and that we give it when it's convenient, but not in principle, that if we do that those things, then somehow the world will become a better place and the darkness that surrounds most people that we know will be dissipated. And I'm saying to you that that just isn't true. That if it took the life of the Son of God to make the world a better place and to save people from their sins, then it's going to take our lives as well. Why should Jesus give his life for us and we not give our life for him? I mean, I think the text is very clear about that. So very quickly then, I just want to give you some New Testament principles, because I know I'm going over, but I need to finish this. The first is this: give without others knowing. Matthew says in chapter 6, but when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Give without others knowing. I do not know what people give here. I don't want to know. We have offering counters who count, and they are very, very discreet. But there are two, maybe three people who know anything. And that's how it should be. Give without others knowing. Number two, freely give. In Matthew and Luke, they both say, heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. He's saying that whatever bad thing is going on in the world, that if you have an opportunity to give and to correct that bad thing, you give freely of yourself to counter that bad thing. You give freely. The third one, give according to giftedness. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is in contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. But give according to how you can give. And many of you do that. And we have been so blessed. The list is really long of the people who have given of their giftedness in this church it's changed our church in some magnificent ways. Give regularly. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. And so the Apostle Paul is saying here is to give on a regular basis. And that's one of the things I was alluding to earlier. It just really helps us if we know that there's an income that's coming in on a regular basis. But when there's a shift of $1,500 a week, we've had a shift of almost $2,000 a week. That is to say that one week we'll get 34 and the next week we'll get 17. Or we'll have several weeks of 17, 22, 25. It makes it challenging. Give cheerfully. Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And I would say this. I'm going to say this. That if you cannot give cheerfully, I would rather you withhold your money. If you cannot give cheerfully, I would rather you hold on to it. The principle of reciprocity when it comes to giving. Give and it will be given to you. A good measure pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. And so that goes back to the Malachi passage where he says, test me in this. Test me. Let me show you how I will bless you. So finally, as those of you who adjust to giving, adjust in this way, pray first about what it is that you should give. Pray about what it means for you to live according to your needs versus wants. Although I will surprise you that I think it would be economically disastrous if the 80 or 90 million Christians in our society lived only according to their wants. Because there are people who make a living based on who live according to their needs. Because there are people, wonderful people, who make a very good living based on what other people want. Does this make sense to you? So, you know, I'm not a communist, okay? Because it doesn't work. Just that simple. Review the New Testament principles that I shared with you earlier. And look, if you know that you give, say, 1% or 2% now, but you really would like to get to a place where you're giving to 10%, then I say this. Because I know you've obligated yourself. And I don't want anyone here going into bankruptcy or in one sense somebody saying that Christian they didn't follow through on their financial I don't think that's where we should be. I say this: give what you can give, give consistently in terms of what you can give, but each year increase it by a percentage or 2 percentage points until you're at a place where you're given 10%. And let the Lord work that out. I think that's on God honoring. So look, Philip Brewer says this: God uses what you have to fill a need, which you could have never filled. God uses where you are to take you where you could have never gone. God uses what you can do to accomplish what you could have never done. God uses who you are to let you become who you could have never been when you let God use you. When you let God use your financial resources, when you let God use your time and talents, God helps to make you something that you could never have been otherwise. Most people I know in here would say, I have been so blessed because I did this thing for that person. And it changed my life. So this is really about, it's not really about giving, this is not really about just brick and mortar. It's not about utilities and salaries. It's not about sermons and Bible studies. It's about us just being faithful in this area of our life and let God holistically bless you and us as we do this. So prayerfully consider. Plan to come tonight if you can, if you're a church member, so that you can be there when we talk about the budget. It's already, been made up. But we need to vote on it, and you need to be a part of what's going on with that. So I hope you receive what I had to say. I hope you received it well. I hope you know my heart on it. And I hope that that as I've talked about it, that we talked about something that's just really important, and that this is a vital part of our spiritual discipline.